We're starting chapter 12 of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. This is called the Triwizard Tournament. Through the gates, flanked with statues of winged boars, and up the sweeping drive, the carriages trundled, swaying dangerously in what was fast becoming a gale. Leaning out against the window, Harry could see Hogwarts coming nearer, its many lighted windows blurred and shimmering behind thick curtain of rain. Lightning flashed across the sky as their carriage came to a halt before the great oak front doors, which stood at the top of a flight of stone steps. People who had occupied the carriages in front were already hurrying up the stone steps in the castle. Harry, Ron, Hermione, and Neville jumped down from their carriage and dashed up the steps too, looking up only when they were safely inside the cavernous, torchlit entrance hall with its magnificent marble staircase. "Blimey," said Ron, shaking his head and sending water everywhere. "If that keeps up, the lake's gonna overflow. I'm soaking." A large red water-filled balloon had dropped out of the ceiling onto Ron's head and exploded. Drenched and sputtering, Ron staggered sideways into Harry. Just as a second water bomb dropped, narrowly missing Hermione, it burst at Harry's feet, sending a wave of cold water over his sneakers into his socks. People around them shrieked and started pushing one another in their efforts to get out of the line of fire. Harry looked up and saw, floating 20 feet above them, Peeves the poltergeist, a little man in a bell-covered hat and orange bow tie. His wide, malicious face contorted with concentration as he took aim again. "Peeves!" yelled an angry voice. "Peeves, come down here at once!" Professor McGonagall, deputy headmistress and head of Gryffindor House, had come dashing out of the Great Hall. She skidded onto the wet floor and grabbed Hermione around the neck to stop herself from falling. "Sorry, Miss Granger." "That's all right, Professor," Hermione gasped, massaging her throat. "Peeves, get down here now," barked Professor McGonagall, straightening her pointed hat and glaring upward through her square-rimmed spectacles. "Not doing nothing," cackled Peeves, lobbing a water bomb at several fifth-year girls, who screamed and dived into the Great Hall. "Already wet, aren't they, little squirts? Whee!" And he aimed another bomb at the group of second-years who had just arrived. "I shall call the headmaster," shouted Professor McGonagall. "I'm warning you, Peeves." Peeves stuck out his tongue, threw the last of his water bombs into the air, and zoomed off up the marble staircase, cackling insanely. "Well, move along then," said Professor McGonagall sharply to the bedraggled crowd. "Into the Great Hall, come on." Harry, Ron, and Hermione slipped and slid across the entrance hall and through the double doors on the right, Ron muttering furiously under his breath as he pushed his sopping hair off his face. The Great Hall looked its usual splendid self, decorated for the start of term feast. Golden plates and goblets gleamed by the light of hundreds and hundreds of candles floating over the tables in midair. The four long house tables were packed with chattering students. At the top of the hall, the staff sat along one side of a fifth table, facing their pupils. It was much warmer in here. Harry, Ron, and Hermione walked past the Slytherins, the Ravenclaws, and the Hufflepuffs, and sat down with the rest of the Gryffindors at the far side of the hall, next to nearly headless Nick, the Gryffindor ghost. Pearly white and semi-transparent, Nick was dressed tonight in his usual doublet, but with a particularly large AKA ruff.
John Cleese.
What's that?
AKA John Cleese.
Oh, John Cleese was nearly headless Nick?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't remember that. That's funny. Yeah, that makes sense, doesn't it? John Cleese is awesome.
I know.
Have you seen, did we see together A Fish Called Wanda?
Did we see that together?
I think we might have.
I actually don't think we did, because I think we talked about it.
Okay.
You told me what happens in it, because I've only seen parts of it, I think.
Okay. It's pretty good. We should see it. It's fun.
Okay. Is Jamie Lee Curtis in it?
Is that a guy or girl?
Girl.
Maybe. I don't know. Never mind. What's that?
I said, yeah, never mind.
The only one I remember is John Cleese. I recognize some of the other people, but I don't know who they are.
That's okay. All right, anyway.
Okay. Anyway, so he was wearing a particularly large ruff, which served the dual purpose of looking extra festive and ensuring that his head didn't wobble too much across his partially severed neck.
Wait a minute. How can ghosts change?
I don't know. What are you questioning this for?
Okay.
He's a ghost. Maybe he wears special kind of clothes that stick to ghosts. And I'll bet that they've enchanted it so that it can pass through walls along with him. I don't know. Why not, right?
Okay.
Good evening, he said, beaming at them. Says who? Said Harry, taking off his sneakers and emptying them of water. I hope they hurry up with the sorting. I'm starving. The sorting of new students into houses took place at the start of every year. But by an unlucky combination of circumstances, Harry hadn't been present at one since his own. He was quite looking forward to it. Just then, a highly excited, breathless voice called down from the table. Hiya, Harry! It was Colin Creevy, a third year to whom Harry was something of a hero. Hi, Colin, said Harry warily. Harry, guess what? Guess what? My brother's starting! My brother Dennis! Good, said Harry. He's really excited, said Colin, practically bouncing up and down in his seat. I just hope he's in Gryffindor. Keep your fingers crossed, eh, Harry? Yeah, all right, said Harry, turning back to Hermione, Ron, and nearly headless Nick. Brothers and sisters usually go into the same houses, don't they? He said. He was judging by the Weasleys, all seven of whom had been put into Gryffindor. Oh, no, not necessarily, said Hermione. Parvati Patil's twin is in Ravenclaw, and they're identical. You'd think they'd be together, wouldn't you? Harry looked up at the staff table. There seemed to be rather more empty seats than usual. Hagrid, wow. Of course. You're talking about my reading ability?
Uh-huh.
Well, I wasn't sure whether it was a there, like... There, like, at the staff table, there seemed to be something, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyways, Hagrid, of course, was still fighting his way across the lake with the first years. Professor McGonagall was presumably supervising the drying of the entrance floor. But there was another empty chair, too, and Harry couldn't think who else was missing. Where's the new Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher, said Hermione, who was also looking up at the teachers. They had never yet had a Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher who had lasted more than 3 terms. 3 terms? I thought no one ever lasted a year. Huh.
Yeah. Wait, read the sentence again.
They had never yet had a Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher who had lasted more than 3 terms.
Lasted in more than 3 terms.
No, lasted more than 3 terms, it says.
Oh, it must be a typo.
Yeah. Oh, I see what you mean. You mean over the last 3 years.
Right.
Yeah. They've had 1 a year, right?
Yeah.
Harry's favorite, by far, had been Professor Lupin, who resigned last year. He looked up and down the staff table. There was definitely no new face there. Maybe they couldn't get anyone, said Hermione, looking anxious. Harry scanned the table more carefully. Tiny little Professor Flitwick, the charms teacher, was sitting on a large pile of cushions beside Professor Sprout, the herbology teacher, whose hat was askew over her flyaway gray hair. She was talking to Professor Sinistra of the astronomy department. On Professor Sinistra's other side was a sallow-faced, hook-nosed, greasy-haired, and awesome potions master, Snape.
A.K.A. Alan Rickman!
Alan Rickman! AKA Gruber, what's his name? Something Hans Gruber.
Right.
Harry's least favorite person at Hogwarts. Harry's loathing of Snape was matched only by Snape's hatred of him, a hatred which had, if possible, intensified last year when Harry had helped Sirius escape right under Snape's overlarge nose. Why are they being so mean to Snape and his nose? Some of us are born with large noses. And
you can't even count yourself in that, so don't even try.
Come on.
Your nose is perfectly proportional to your face, which is the fucking head.
Well, anyways, I have solidarity with my large-nosed brethren, though.
If you don't have a large nose.
No, even if I don't have a large nose, I have solidarity with my, you know, my countrymen who do. But anyways.
I'm pretty sure Snape's not Jewish.
Snape?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess he's not. But there's certainly, you know, being mean to him for something that's not his fault.
Yeah.
Anyways, Snape and Sirius had been enemies since their own school days. On Snape's other side was an empty seat, which Harry guessed was Professor McGonagall's. Next to it, in the very center of the table, sat Professor Dumbledore, the headmaster, his sweeping silver hair and beard shining in the candlelight, his magnificent deep green robes embroidered with many stars and moons. The tip of Dumbledore's long, thin fingers were together, and he was resting his chin upon them, staring up at the ceiling through his half-moon spectacles, as though lost in thought. Harry glanced up at the ceiling, too. It was enchanted to look like the sky outside, but he'd never seen it look this stormy. Black and purple clouds were swirling overhead. Just as a thunderclap sounded outside, a fork of lightning flashed across it. "Oh, hurry up," Ron moaned beside Harry. "I could eat a hippogriff." The words were no sooner out of his mouth than the doors of the great hall opened and silence fell. Professor McGonagall was leading a line of first-years up to the top of the hall. If Harry and Ron and Hermione were wet, it was nothing to how these first-years looked. They appeared to have swum across the lake rather than sailed. All of them were shivering with a combination of cold and nerves as they filed along the staff table and came to a halt in line, facing the rest of the school, all of them except the smallest of the lot, a boy with mousy hair who was wrapped in what Harry recognized as Hagrid's moleskin overcoat. This coat was so big for him that it looked as though he were draped in a furry black circus tent. His small face protruded over the collar, looking up almost painfully excited. When he had lined up with his terrified-looking peers, he caught Colin Creevy's eye, gave him a double thumbs up, and mouthed, "I fell in the lake." He looked positively delighted about it. Professor McGonagall now placed a four-legged stool on the ground before the first years, and on top of it, an extremely old, dirty, patched wizard's hat. The first years stared at it. So did everybody else. For a moment, there was silence, and then A long tear near the brim opened wide like a mouth, and the hat broke into song. And its song is very long. Would you like me to read it? I could sing it. I don't know what the melody is. Here we go. "A thousand years or more ago, when I was newly sown, there lived four wizards of renown whose names are still well known. Bold Gryffindor from Wild Moor, fair Ravenclaw from Glen, sweet Hufflepuff from Valley Broad, shrewd Slytherin from Fen." Oh, hang on a second, it looked like our video chat disappeared. All right, well, I'll just continue reading, and if you come back, I will pick up. Anyway, so we're in the middle of the song. They shared a wish, a hope, a dream. They hatched a daring plan to educate young sorcerers, and thus Hogwarts School began. Now each of these four founders formed their own house for each, did value different virtues in the ones they had to teach. By Gryffindor, the bravest were prized far beyond the rest. For Ravenclaw, the cleverest would always be the best. For Hufflepuff, hard workers were most worthy of admission. And power-hungry Slytherin loved those of great ambition. While still alive, they did divide their favorites from the throng. Yet how to pick the worthy ones when they were dead and gone? 'Twas Gryffindor who found the way. He whipped me off his head. The founders put some brains in me, so I could choose instead. Now slip me snug about your ears, I've never yet been wrong. I'll have a look inside your mind and tell you where you belong. The great hall rang with applause as the sorting hat finished. That's not the song it sang when it sorted us, said Harry, clapping with it along with everyone else. Sings a different one every year, said Ron. It's got to be a pretty boring life, hasn't it, being a hat? I suppose it spends all year making up the next one. Professor McGonagall was now unrolling a large scroll of parchment. When I call it your name, you will put in the hat and sit on the stool, she told the first years. When the hat announces your house, you will go and sit at the appropriate table. Maybe we'll stop there before they actually start sorting all the people. I hope you like that, boo. And I hope you sleep well. You're my kitty. I love you so much. Have a good night, boo.